Instead, we're going for a walk, he says, jerking me closer. Let's not, I answer, and my free hand juts forward to his groin. My aim is on the mark, my grip as tight as his. His eyes widen. His fingers tighten on my wrist. My fingers tighten, too. His eyelids flutter. His face reddens. I may walk funny, Dane, but Ethan says I have the endurance of a horse. I can stand her all day long, can you? He makes a last effort by twisting my wrist. Pain rips up my arm. In return, my other hand squeezes beyond his limits. He screams out, releasing my wrist. I let go of him, and he falls to his knees, moaning. Besides the revulsion running through me, I feel something unexpected. Gratitude. He's shown me how empty a 100% human being can be. Percentages can be deceptive. His face trembles, and his eyes are sharp and cold, looking up at me. He's still trying to catch his breath, and I know I have only a few seconds before he comes at me again. Jenna, there you are! Shall we finish our walk? Mr. Bender comes through the woods, making a show of his golf club, swinging it more than he is using it for balance on the hillside. Yes, I say, leaving Dane to contemplate how much worse a golf club in his skull might feel than my hand in his groin. Mr. Bender and I walk down the incline and cross the creek where a downed log provides a bridge. I was in my yard when I saw you walk into the forest, he says. When I saw Dane follow a short time later, I grabbed my club. Thank you. Between your golf club and my grip, I think he's headed in the other direction by now. We walk out of the forest and up the path that leads to his house. Should we call the police? I hesitate. No, it wouldn't be a good idea for either of us. I'll be more careful in the future. You shouldn't go into the forest alone. It's not just that criminal. Sometimes there are mountain lions in the area. I stop and face him. Really, Mr. Bender? Or should I call you Edward? We both know I can be replaced as easily as a damaged netbook. Backups are handy that way. He looks almost as stunned as Dane did a few minutes ago. How'd you figure it out? The backups or you? Both. I have 500 billion neurochips, Mr. Bender. It wasn't difficult, but Father probably told you about that already. Mr. Bender nods, looking down. He shouldn't be ashamed. He was Father's friend before he was mine. I resume my pace. When you have 5 times the brain capacity, I guess it's just a matter of time before you start using it. Details from 2-year-old Jenna's brain had surfaced sometime after I saw the old, battered aqua car in Mr. Bender's garage. And I finally remembered an old photo that hung in our brownstone when I was a toddler. It was of Father with his first car. The aqua one he passed on to you. Small slips, these are. Memories they wouldn't expect from a 2-year-old. But my memories don't differentiate. 2 days, 2 years, or 10. They're all the same weight and intensity. I just found the house for him. I owed him that, he says. I don't know as much as you may think. Your father told me very little. To spare you, probably. The less you know, the less guilty, right? He doesn't reply. So you kept in touch with him all these years? Not at first, but after a few years I needed that connection. I needed someone who knew me before, so that the rest of my life wasn't invalid. It's more painful to leave your identity behind than most people imagine. Essentially, you've been erased. It doesn't really make sense, I know. But when I finally contacted your dad, he listened, and he understood. He was always there for me, from giving me his car when I needed to get away, to being there when I needed to talk. You talk often? Maybe once every year or so. Not often. And then we have to be careful. He called me when you were hurt. He was wild with grief, and then he called me again a few days later. He babbled mostly, thinking out loud. I thought he was drunk at first, really talking more to himself than me. But I guess he just needed me there to listen. He said he knew he was going to lose you unless he did something drastic. He didn't tell me what. He just hung up. And I didn't hear from him again until he called about needing a house that was out of the way. So that was your role. Long-distance realtor. A slight tilt of his head and a hesitant nod makes me remember what Lily said. Oh, and you were also the other half of the whisking team, I add.
Whisking?
Getting me out of Dodge. He smiles.
Right. I'm part of the emergency drill. Your father said he'd rather keep you here since he can easily get medical support if something goes wrong. But if the authorities should find out, your grandmother is to bring you to my house. From there, I take both of you to an airstrip not far from here. It's only a short flight over the border into Mexico, to another airstrip. And from there, you'd fly to Italy. Italy has more liberal laws regarding transplants.
And brain uploads? The Italians can't count? He's silent. Or to make matters simpler and save you some time, my parents could just pop my back up in the mail instead. Parcel post could take me to Italy, probably for a lot less expense and worry. Or if they really want to splurge, they could overnight me with Air Express. Or they could...
The rising delirium in my voice makes me stop my rant. Come, Mr. Bender says. Let's sit and talk for a bit.
I nod and follow him up the slope to his house, and we sit in two chairs on his back porch, looking out at the pond and my own house on the other side. What's wrong with Dane, Mr. Bender? I ask. My friend Alice says he's missing something.
I don't know exactly, Jenna, but I think your friend might be right. All I know for sure is that he's trouble.
But at least legal. Mr. Bender jogs his chair toward me and leans forward.
Listen to me, Jenna. There are different kinds of laws. Some are written in books, and some are written in here.
He taps his chest.
Dane may have the paper kind of legal, but he has none of the kind that's planted inside.
But how does it get there? I look at him, his hand still resting against his chest. How does the legal kind get inside? Can it be sewn in by a surgeon with careful stitches? What do you see, Mr. Bender, when you look at me? I watch his eyes, taking in my skin, my face, my eyes. I see him consider every twitch, every blink of my eyes. I can see his every misstep, every considered lie, every return to truth. It's a line he crosses often, and sometimes lies and truth melt into something else. His tongue runs across his lips. He blinks. Truth. Lie. Truth. The something else. Confusion at what I am? Please, I say.
I see a lot of complicated things when I look at you, Jenna. A horrible unexpected turn. A second chance. Hope.
I stand. Hope for what, Mr. Bender? A life where I can never be what I was and can't even be what I am now without hiding? This is all too hard.
Jenna, he stands and holds my shoulders. I'm sorry for what you're going through. I know it's been difficult. Believe me, no one knows as well as I do how hard it is to start over. I think that's why I wanted to help you from the beginning, maybe even when I shouldn't have. I saw the frightened teen I once was when I looked at you.
He lets go of my shoulders, but I keep looking into his face. Mr. Bender is as old as my father, but I see something in him that is as young as me. Do certain events in our lives leave a permanent mark, freezing a piece of us in time, and that becomes a touchstone that we measure the rest of our lives against? I feel my fists relax, my joints loosen. I think it was good luck that you were my first friend, Mr. Bender.
First?
That's right. Jenna's first friend, A.D. His eyebrows raise. After disaster. He laughs, his curious Mr. Bender laugh,
and then suggests a walk in his garden. We reach the circular clearing where he feeds the birds.
Here, he says as he removes his jacket. I've been borrowing Clayton Bender's identity for 30 years. Let me share it with you for a few minutes.
He places his jacket on my shoulders and then takes my palm and rubs it with his own.
Turns out that birds have a better sense of smell than most people thought.
We sit on the log bench and he fills my palm with seed, and even though it's only for the briefest moment, a sparrow lands and flies away with a beakful.
See? They're used to you now. Next time you won't need me.
I decide that sometimes definitions are wrong, even if they're written in a dictionary. Identities aren't always separate and distinct. Sometimes they are wrapped up with others. Sometimes, for a few minutes, maybe they can even be shared. And if I'm ever fortunate enough to return to Mr. Bender's garden, I wonder if the birds will see that piece of him that's wrapped up in me. Listening. The silence, darkness, nothing. Please, let us go. Help us. Jenna, we need you. Hurry, Jenna, we need you. Screaming. I hear screaming. My own screams. Theirs. But no one can hear. A place so dark no one can hear. Except me. Help! Please! Somebody! Jenna, wake up!
Father is holding me.
Mother sits at the end of my bed. I am in a place of light and touch again.
You were dreaming, Father says, squeezing me.
No, I say. I was...
Impossible.
Father's face is lined, tired. Fear. Mother is perched, waiting, her hair a bird's nest.
You were what, Jenna?
I was listening.
To what, darling, what?
Mother asks.
To Kara and Locke. They're calling me. I heard their voices.
Father brushes my hair from my face and touches my cheek.
That's impossible, Angel. You were only dreaming, that's all.
I don't argue. There'd be no point. But I didn't dream the voices. I heard them. Fresh and now. Somehow, some way, they found me. They need me. But I need them, too. In the flash between darkness and light, between dream world and reality, I cross a boundary. I remember the accident. The accident. Every detail, sharp, like claws. It wasn't the biogel, the searching neurochips, or any of the shortcomings of my new self. It was me all along. The grieving me. The shocked me. The in denial me. But now, Kara and Locke are forcing me to remember. I sit in the dark, a sliver of light from the hallway slashed across my bed. I listen to the faint wheeze of air entering and leaving my chest. Breathing. A new kind of breathing. Because of that night. Keys flying in the air. My fingers outstretched. My fingers were throwing the keys, not catching them.
I can't drive, Locke, I told him.
You're the only one with a car, he complained.
If you don't drive, Jenna, then we can't go,
Kara added.
We need you.
I'm not driving without a license. Besides, my voice commands aren't even programmed into the car yet. I couldn't start it anyway.
Kara could drive, Locke says.
And starting it's not a problem. There's an override. You must have a code or keys around here somewhere.
The kitchen drawer, where Claire keeps all the extra keys. I could have pretended I didn't know where they were. I could have distracted them. But I didn't. I opened the drawer and pulled them out.
Yes, Locke says, and snatches the keys from my hand. He throws them to Kara.
They wait for my response. I hesitate, wondering, thinking, but not for too long. I nod. So we went. Kara drove. I gave her the keys. I let her drive my car that even I wasn't supposed to drive yet. Mother and father were away for the night.